You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 5th of April 2021, and you're listening to me, Sam Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, happy Easter to everyone. Christ is risen, and happy bank holiday to all the British listeners. Obviously, we do have a Daily Nationalist for today, but instead of Real Britannia, later on we will have a Greatest Britons episode for you. Well, let's get into the news for today. And I found this particularly interesting poll, which was actually carried out back in February. And it corresponds to a similar poll that was carried out in America, which discovered that 60% of Americans were afraid to say how they felt online. Because they thought they could lose their job or they could lose their friends. And nowadays, it's even seems that you can lose your bank account as well as all your social media accounts. I mean, just look at what happened to Donald Trump. He's still not allowed on Twitter or Facebook. People aren't even allowed to interview Donald Trump on Facebook. His daughter-in-law interviewed him, and the interview was banned. Zuckerberg banned it. So it doesn't matter who you are, you can still be cancelled by these tech companies. So people are quite right to be concerned about this, and particularly in America, which has free speech written into the Constitution. And the excuse they use over there is that that is just the government that is supposed to guarantee free speech, and private companies don't have to guarantee free speech. If that is so, then how come private companies are being forced to bake cakes for transsexuals and homosexuals? They're forced to do that, and yet it's perfectly okay for them to refuse to provide services to somebody because they don't like their politics. Well, obviously, we're having the same problem over here in Britain, and this poll makes that clear. The impact of the rise of cancel culture in Britain has been laid bare by an exclusive poll that reveals half of Britons believe they are less free to say what they think than 5 years ago. Half of Britons. Savanta Comrades interviewed 2,119 UK adults aged over 18 online from February the 5th to the 7th this year. Freedom of speech in the UK is under threat, 50% of people say, compared with less than a quarter, 24%, who disagree. So people understand that it is under threat. How could it be that it is under threat? We're not bringing in laws saying you can't criticise the government. We're not bringing in laws saying you can't point out crimes. But what has happened is that laws that are supposed to be there to prevent public disorder and to prevent people from calling for other people to be killed are being misused. They're being misused to censor people's speech, this term hate speech, which of course people think, well, we don't like the idea of somebody hating somebody else. And this idea of hate, this idea of intent to incite hate was brought in supposedly to be a way to prevent people from encouraging people to hate others to the extent that they would go out and murder them. It happened after Stephen Lawrence was murdered, and they said, well, we don't actually have a law to prevent people from getting together and saying, well, let's get together and kill somebody from an ethnic minority. So they said, well, we'll have to make a law that will prevent people from saying things like that. So they came up with this idea, we'll say intent to incite hate, and we'll have the bar very high so that it has to be that people are really inciting others to go out and kill people. And then we will prosecute people for their speech. And then you fast forward 30 years and you get to the stage we are at now, where somebody can make a joke about another ethnic minority and they can be accused of inciting hate. Somebody could use a racial slur. And don't forget, what we call racial slurs today was just normal language 10, 20 years ago. I can remember when there were rap groups in the top 10 that used the so-called N-word in the title of the band. I guess that was probably 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, something like that. I'm sure a lot of you can work out the name of the band that I'm referring to. Well, just using that word today, you could be accused of incitement to hate. So we've gone from using language which could directly encourage somebody to go out and kill somebody to just common everyday language that certain elements of our community use. And of course, certain elements of our community are completely shielded from any consequences for using that word. But if you're white and you use that word, then you can be accused of incitement to hate. So this is how this censorship has come in. This is how we have lost our freedom of speech. And a lot of people are concerned, and they will say, well, they've actually made it so that the truth is no longer a defense, because you could be pointing out facts, you could be pointing out statistics, and you could be accused of hate speech by quoting those statistics, all based upon what your intent was in coming out with them. And quite clearly, people aren't coming out with facts and statistics because they want to encourage the listeners to go out and kill anyone. People are quoting facts and statistics because they wish a change to be made at the government level to shield the people from the consequences of things such as crime statistics. There's no hate involved there, but people will still be accused of incitement to hate because they will say, well, the people that are carrying out these crimes, they're an ethnic minority, and therefore you're singling them out, so it must be incitement to hate, and then you would have to argue that in court. It's ridiculous what is going on here, and a lot of people don't even realise that it is going on, but I am encouraged to see that 50% of people here are concerned about it. We've also got the blasphemy laws, which are sneaking their way in under this as well, where somebody could be making a quite legitimate criticism of a certain religion, and they can be accused of hate speech there because it may be something about the religion that the members of that religion don't like people to be talking about. I mean, there are lots of things, aren't there? There's Muhammad with his 9-year-old wife, and people have said, well, Muhammad was a pedophile because he had a 9-year-old wife. And by today's standards, that would be a perfectly true thing to say. Maybe 1,500 years ago, it was a lot more acceptable and was not seen as pedophilia. But to say that today, people have been accused of trying to incite hatred there, as if they're trying to encourage people to go out and kill Muslims simply by pointing this out. And of course, people are pointing it out to show that in their views, Islam is backwards and it is not up to modern standards of morality. And they will use that as an example of it. They're not trying to incite hate. There's no intent there to incite hate against any people with protected characteristics. But these are the ways that our speech is being clamped down upon. These are the ways that they're trying to prevent us from criticising government policy. Some of you will recall over Christmas, I did a series of podcasts on the Law Commission's report on the hate speech laws, where what they were trying to do is make it hate speech to bring up somebody's immigration status or to bring up refugee status. And of course, that would mean that you were prevented from criticizing government policy. Immigration is a government policy. Refugee status is a government policy. And the shocking thing about this Law Commission is they want to broaden the reach of these hate speech laws, but there's no actual justification for it. The numbers of people that have been the victim of violent, racially motivated crimes can continue to go down. They haven't gone up. The speech laws would appear to have served their purpose. They would appear to have prevented people from being incited to go out and murder minorities, because that really doesn't happen. So it would seem that these laws have functioned correctly, and yet they still want to expand their reach. And now we see that they're saying that those alternative views that actually keep within the law, they want to change the law so that they don't keep within the law. Law-abiding people like Mark Collette and Laura Towler, they try to say, well, what they're saying isn't terrorism and what they're saying isn't incitement to hate, so we have to come up with a new designation to make what they do illegal. And it's effectively saying it's the people that they just want to make illegal. They just want to make people who stand up for white people, they want to make that illegal. They want to make it illegal for us to talk about the things that are of interest to us and force us to only talk about things that are of interest to others. It's absolutely ludicrous what is going on. Just one in eight, 12%, believes people have greater freedom to speak freely than 5 years ago, compared with 49% who feel the opposite. I wonder who that is that thinks that people have greater freedom to speak. They are probably thinking that it's easier to talk about sexual issues now. They probably aren't really understanding what freedom of speech is about, because with the degeneration of our morals, you see that more and more things that never would have been discussed years ago are now being discussed on the television, are now being taught to children. And of course, that isn't really freedom of speech, is it? That is the degeneration of morals. That is the sort of argument that claims that pornography is freedom of speech, when pornography quite clearly is damaging to society, particularly damaging to children when they see it. Now, this is the argument that we saw play out in America that ended up with pornography being legalized. And freedom of speech should really be about the freedom to criticize the authority and to criticize the authority's policies. So I would suggest that the one in eight here, that the 12% here that believe we have greater freedom of speech, are probably thinking about sexual issues rather than even understanding the racial connotations of this. In recent years, there has been a rise in celebrities, including J.K. Rowling, being cancelled on social media for speaking out on topics such as transgender rights. The study finds that more than 4 in 10 Britons, 43%, say they are afraid to speak their minds on immigration matters, compared with 28% who felt they could. Again, immigration is a government policy, isn't it? It's nothing about the individuals. And what we talk about here at Radio Album is group behavior. We're not singling out individuals. And when we talk about the group behavior, we're talking about the response to that group behavior that we see in whites. We're not necessarily criticizing the group for its behavior. For instance, if we happen to be talking about Jews and talking about Jews that are advocating for immigration, we're not condemning the Jews for doing that. We understand that Jews advocating for immigration is of benefit to the Jewish group. What we are discussing it for is because we want white people particularly, to understand that when Jews are advocating for more immigration, that it is not out of it being of some benefit to whites, but because it's of benefit to Jews, and that as whites we should be concerned about this. In the same way that Jews are concerned about it in Israel, and if you look at the Israelis, they don't allow any immigration from these other countries. They don't even allow black Jews to come into Israel. So it's not as if we are pointing out anything here which is not just common sense, and it's not because we have any hostility to Jews. We see Jews as our competitors here, as our opponents in a Darwinian struggle for group survival, and that is basic biology. That is what is going on here. It's not about hate. It's about us trying to improve the conditions of our own people, and this is why we discuss these issues, not because we are trying to incite hate. A similar percentage, 42%, admit they are scared to speak openly on transgender rights. A quarter say they feel okay to speak out. And the quarter that were saying they did feel okay to speak out, they were probably supportive of transgenderism, and they're probably thinking, well, it's a subject that does get discussed today, and it really didn't used to get talked about very much 10 or 20 years ago. But the real point here is that if you are talking about biological differences between men and women, and there are biological differences, you can be accused of trying to incite hate against transgenders for pointing out that men and women have different bone structures, men and women have different brain sizes, men and women have different brain formation. The bit that joins the right hemisphere of the brain to the left hemisphere of the brain in females is much wider than in men. It's much narrower in men. This is why men find it much easier to separate logic from emotion. And with women, they find that very difficult to do, which is why women are more concerned with their feelings and men are more concerned with facts. There are all these differences between men and women, like the hand size, the feet size, the muscle size, the position of where the anus is. And it's just incredible that people can think that all they have to do is just take the opposite sex's hormones and they will magically transform into the opposite sex. That is just not reality. So what we've actually done here is we are forcing people to go along with the fantasies of these transgenders. And again, we are not talking about this because we hate transgenders or are trying to incite hatred against them. I feel particularly compassionate towards transgenders. I think it's a terrible thing that has happened to them, that they feel confused about their gender, that they feel that their body is not their own body. It must be an absolutely awful position to be in. But we don't believe that the way to deal with that is to humour them and have everybody else pretend that they are the opposite sex. The correct way to deal with it is to help them to be happy within their own bodies. That would be the sensible way to deal with this. And we should be free to say that. We should be free to say that because it's got nothing to do with inciting hate. It's not because we're frightened of these people. We don't have a phobia about them. We just think that there are better ways to help them. And as is pointed out here, even somebody such as J.K. Rowling has been cancelled for this. And she's very, very liberal in her views and in her children's books. Apparently she has homosexuals in her children's books, and yet she's been cancelled as well, which did make a good point actually of just how extensive this is, just how pervasive this silencing of people's views are when you see people such as her that are also being cancelled, and very, very hypocritical actually of the people that were in the movies, in the Harry Potter movies, to then attack the hand that fed them. I mean, they would not have been famous movie stars if it had not been for J.K. Rowling, but that didn't stop them all from stabbing her in the back. The survey also finds that 43% of people are afraid to speak their minds with the police while 23% are unafraid. So people are afraid to say to the police what's going on in their communities because they're frightened they will be accused of being racist. I suspect this is to do with the grooming gangs, when people were reporting what was going on, that these girls were being raped and were being pimped out and drugged, and they were accused of being racist and Islamophobic for pointing this out. So real crimes, real actual violent crimes that have horrific consequences go unsolved, while supposed crimes of hurt feelings are now concentrated on by the police. And I'm sure that the more sensible police don't like doing this and would question this. But the problem is, they get all this diversity training and it's all provided for them by Hope Not Hate and all these other organisations that are just set up for that purpose. And they don't actually hear the other point of view. They don't actually get told that Britain wasn't always multicultural. They don't get told that Britain didn't always have Muslims here. And they don't get told the other side of things. And they don't question it. A lot of people just don't question it. So many people have just never heard our points, the points that we raise. And of course, that's because we are censored all the time, because nobody will debate us, because the National Union of Journalists has a policy not to give a so-called platform to anyone on the so-called far right. So you will only ever read negative opinions on us in the newspapers, or you will read flat out lies about us. And that's what the police see when they read the newspapers, and that's what they get when they're on their diversity training. So unless they're really in the top percentile of people that question things and think about things, they're just going to go along with what they're told. But I do suspect that a lot of them are not happy about going after people for things that they've said, instead of going after people for actually carrying out violent crimes, because I suspect the people that do join the police, they want to do so out of a desire to get the bad guys in society, not out of a desire to silence the people that criticise government policy. Many respondents are in favour of the Black Lives Matter movement, 37% for and 31% against. Now, that is interesting, isn't it? And I guess that a lot of people that were filling this in are thinking, well, black lives do matter, and these black people, they do seem to get killed a lot by the police. And again, that is a false use of the statistics, isn't it? Because white people are far more likely to actually get killed by the police. And the reason why so many blacks get killed by the police is, number one, because they are far more likely to be arrested for a crime. And number two, because they're far more likely to resist arrest. Whenever you see these videos of these so-called black victims of police violence, they are always resisting arrest. Every single time they will be resisting arrest. Whereas when the white man is arrested, he tends to do what the police ask him to do. And a lot of this is down, again, it's down to the journalists, because a lot of blacks really do think that if they're pulled over by the police, that they're going to assassinate them. They think the police are just going to go after them because of the colour of their skin. So when they get arrested, they are terrified that they're going to be killed. And so they act in crazy ways, which make them look more suspicious. And that is down to the mainstream media and this false narrative that it promotes. And broken down by age, the survey shows that half of 18 to 34-year-olds have a favourable opinion of Black Lives Matter. But this falls to just over a quarter, 27%, for over 55s. Again, that is something that we saw with these protests, that it was young people that were supporting Black Lives Matter, it was a lot of women, and it was a lot of white people, particularly in America, because they were calling for the defunding of the police, but the polls were showing that the black community, they wanted the police there. If anything, they wanted more police. They certainly didn't want the police to leave their communities. The murder rate in America has gone through the roof since these Black Lives Matter protests. It's incredible. It's doubled in some places, maybe even tripled. And this is because they've cut back on the funding for the police. And the police are now too frightened to arrest anybody black because they will be accused of racism if they do. And I guess a lot of the people that support this Black Lives Matter movement, they haven't thought about the connotations of it. I mean, if we're not allowed to say white lives matter, then why are they allowed to say black lives matter? Surely all lives matter. And of course, what they're trying to draw attention to here is they're trying to say, well, black people tend to lose their lives more often at the hands of police. And again, the reason for that is because they resist arrest more. You're not going to solve that problem by getting rid of the police, are you? If you get rid of the police, you're just going to have a lawless society and even more black people are going to die. I dare say a lot of these Black Lives Matter protesters have never actually looked at the murder rate among the black community. I mean, they are five times more likely to murder somebody than a white man is. And 90% of the time, it is their own community that they are killing. Yet you don't hear Black Lives Matter protesting about all the black people killed by other black people. You just hear them protesting about the odd few blacks that are actually killed by the police during the year. The findings by the Reclaim Party, that's who it is that actually commissioned this, I believe, Lawrence Fox's new party, also look at venues. According to the survey, we feel happier speaking our minds at home, 56%, followed by in pubs and restaurants with friends, 45%, and then the office, 24%. And this is interesting. People feel safe speaking their minds at home, 56%. You would imagine that was 100%. Who is it that they are concerned about? Is it that they are concerned about their partner? And it should be 0% that are happy speaking their minds at home in Scotland, because don't forget this new law that Hamza Yousaf has brought in means that people can be prosecuted for what they say within their own home. And with the advent of all these machines that you speak to that are connected to the internet, such as Alexa, it means that anybody could be arrested, even if there's nobody else in the home apart from them and a friend of theirs. Could be that Alexa is listening and will report them to the police. And under the new Scottish law, they could be charged. In pubs and restaurants, you should be free to talk about whatever you like, so long as you're not breaking the law. And that's not what is being talked about here, remember. They're not talking about breaking the law here. They're talking about people saying things that are within the law, and even saying things that are within the law. It's only 45% of people feel happy talking about that in a restaurant where they may be overheard, and only 24% in the office, because they know that they could lose their job. Most of the people that lost their social media accounts never broke any laws. This is the main criticism against it. This is the criticism that Poland and Hungary have leveled against Facebook and Twitter. If they remove anybody Polish from Facebook or Twitter and they have broken no Polish law, then they can sue Facebook. And that's the way that it should be, because these social media companies are just removing all speech that does not support the owners of the media companies' politics. And their argument will be, well, they're private companies. But they're private companies with a monopoly. That is like saying that the telephone company should be able to ban people who have different politics to the owners of the telephone company. That would be ridiculous, wouldn't it? It's the same with Royal Mail or the American Postal Service, saying you're not allowed to use the Postal Service because your politics are different to the left-wing politics of the Postal Service's owners. That would be a ridiculous thing to do. And yet that is what we're doing with these giant social media companies that have become the modern equivalent of the village square. When they were started up, it was all about free speech. Here you are. This is your chance to say how you feel. And if there are people out there that enjoy listening to what you say, they can subscribe to you and you can talk to one another. And it was a great advance in democracy. But then because a lot of people weren't saying the same things that the government say or the same things that the media companies say, suddenly it becomes a threat to democracy and we have to remove this wonderful democratic chance that everybody had to talk to one another. It's scandalous the way that they accuse things of being a threat to democracy when in actual fact what they really are is genuine democracy in action. The internet used to be genuinely democratic. The Google search engine is now pretty much useless for looking things up. I am often using it to look things up that I may not have looked up for a year or two, and they're just not, you just can't find them on there anymore. All you can find is things that have been sponsored by the BBC or by CNN. There used to be so many alternative blogs and platforms out there with niche interests on them, and you just can't find them anymore. They've just all been wiped. And that is effectively saying we're just going to remove all the independent parties and just have the major political parties there. It's the equivalent of doing that in an election, isn't it? Because that's what's really going on with the internet. It's all about whoever is the most popular, and whatever site is the most popular rises in the search rankings. I mean, you don't get more democratic than that. To remove that and say, we're not going to allow you to see what is the most popular, that is totalitarian, isn't it? That is a tyranny. Anyway, it's good that 50% of people actually know that this is going on, but it's an absolute scandal that 50% of people are too frightened to actually speak how they feel within the law. Don't forget, none of this is about breaking the law. This is about speech that is within the law. And 50% of people are too frightened to speak their minds in Britain today. What does that say about our country? Well, it says to me that it's turning into a tyranny. If you can't speak your mind, that was the defense that St. Paul had, is that you have to speak what your eyes see and your ears hear, and it's no different today. It's an essential part of being a human being, is being able to communicate to others how you see the world around you. It's fundamental to social interactions that we can be honest about how we feel. Obviously, that has to be balanced against the rest of society, which is why we came up with these laws in the first place. But the reason why we had these laws, as I pointed out earlier, was to prevent people from encouraging others to go out and murder somebody. They were never intended to prevent people from holding the government's policies up to scrutiny or criticizing sectors of the community for bad behavior. I mean, these laws are basically turned into a way to shield bad behavior from scrutiny. It cannot end well, can it, when we're suppressing an essential part of what it means to be human like this? I just hope that eventually we do see a turnaround. We may well do when we've got 50% of the country that can see this. When we have the Conservative Party in Scotland saying they want to reverse Hamza Yousaf's bill. So we do see some positive signs, at least. Anyway, I think we'll leave that there for today. Thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.